Good afternoon, everyone. Really enjoyed Cresta's presentation just now. Very engaging, very personal. I feel like mine now might be a bit of a stats fest, which is probably not a good time of day, but I've got some enlightening ideas, or at least I think they're enlightening. And I've entitled my presentation, How It's All Changed. What I wanted to do is talk a little bit about how much digital has really progressed in the last sort of 10 years, the last decade, to give us a little bit of a kind of viewpoint as to how quickly that's happened, how much more it can proceed in the next probably 2 to 5 to 10 years, given the pace of technological change. So it's a little bit of a retrospective, a little bit of a look at where we are now, and then some sort of ideas for the future. Not really forecasts as such, but some good food for thought, I hope. So thank you for the kind welcome. I'm Sophia Amin, look after marketing communications and membership, I guess, at the IB. In case you don't know who we are, not a sell, but just so you know where I'm coming from, we're the Trade Association for Online and Mobile Advertising. We've existed for about over 10 years. We are member-funded, and these sorts of people, about 700 organisations, are our members, advertisers, media owners, publishers, and agencies themselves. Our mission is really to define the future of digital advertising, although sometimes I drop the digital and just say the future of advertising, because I believe digital is where it is at, total digital native. Things that we do, lots of research, big sort of broad sweep pieces, some of which I'll bring to you today, as well as some niche guides and useful stats, a lot of which you can get, even if you're not a member, we press release a lot of it, so there's kind of headlines. We do a lot of events, similar to this, small ones, large ones, conferences, Engage is our kind of flagship. We do a lot in the field of best practice and education, which really guidance, handbooks, white papers, but also we do a lot in the field of regulation, which is becoming an ever important growing area in digital. We're trying to ensure that the industry remains self-regulated. So we have a very powerful team who helps to drive the agenda at Brussels and make sure that we're creating the best conditions for the digital environment. We also do training to complement our events. So that's just a little bit about the IAB. A little bit about me, just to give you some context. I've been at the IAB for just over a year. Prior to that, I sort of worked in creative agencies. So my background has always been in digital creative agency land. And I guess that will sort of skew how I kind of introduced the last 10 years. Worked on brands such as Sainsbury's, ITV, Master Foods, Barclays, all sorts of kind of brands, B2B, B2C, a real range across integrated campaigns and digital. But what I thought I'd do was just roll back the years. And if we think back 10 years, I was kind of thinking, what was the music I was sat at my desk in my trendy little digital agency 10 years ago listening to while I was trying to make the world brilliant with digital? And it was these sorts of albums. It was Parachutes from Coldplay. It was Dido. It was Robbie Williams. It was those sorts of music. So that just gives you a bit of context as to sort of roll back the years. And back then, we didn't have the shizzle. What do I mean by this? Well, computers looked a bit like that, not a bit like this, or a bit like an iPad or tablet device. So the screen resolution was tiny. They took up loads of room on your desk. They took about half an hour to boot up. WAP was launched. That was in about 1999, so just over 10 years ago. Absolutely fell on its face. Everyone was incredibly excited about what it might be. It wasn't what anyone hoped it would be. A lot of consumers spent money investing in it, thinking they were going to get ahead of it. It was resurged in 2002, but even then it didn't quite make it. So there was a lot of, you know, expectation, excitement about digital, but there was also a lot of expectation that sometimes wasn't fulfilled. And this particular thing just made me laugh to think what it used to be like, because we only really had, well, I only really had, as a sort of new starter in London, internet at work, didn't have it at home. But where you did have it, it sort of sounded, oops, excuse me, it sounded a little bit like this. It went on, and maybe, just maybe, you got a connection and it stayed on for at least half an hour. You didn't dare leave your desk to make a cup of tea in case, you know, the connection broke. So, you know, broadband was, I think, the first broadband connection in the UK wasn't until March 2000, so, you know, just 12 years ago. It's quite phenomenal to think that we just take it for granted now that, you know, you're on the train and you want to send an email, you know, whatever you're doing, you expect to have signal. You don't expect any of that. So that is in the past. The players at that time were very interesting. A lot of them were kind of quite direct response focused. So the banks, the telecommunications industry, COI was a big client of mine, working on the government, and travel. They were great. They had money. They were interested in digital. They were putting the briefs out. It was all a great, great time. Although that did quite sort of curb, I guess, where we ended up. In some arenas, certainly FMCG, adoption was very slow. It was a sort of tough nut to crack because a lot of marketing directors and sort of seniors weren't really buying into the concept of digital, and this can still be a challenge. It's so much less tangible than channels that have existed before. You know, you don't get to see a TV ad in Coronation Street necessarily. You might not see your poster on the M25. Digital is fantastic, but digital is not sort of something you can stick on somebody's desk necessarily in every sort of format. So there was a kind of a little bit of scepticism, and that can still continue. But also there was a lot of expectation to invest into an app or a site. I say an app these days and a site then, but never think about the media strategy or the, you know, how are you going to drive people there? How are you going to let people know that you exist and therefore make it a success? So there was kind of a lot to do, and there still sometimes is. And it was all about click-through rate, the damn CTR and direct response. CTR was a fabulous product for digital to be able to go out and sell. It allowed us to say, digital is brilliant, you can measure it, you put this much money in, you can see your ROI. And that was fab, except for it only really worked in direct response. It certainly doesn't work in brand. And actually, in some cases, it doesn't work for DR. So you saw a lot of this, kind of, this is an ad I made myself. But, you know, shouty, get with it, direct, just sort of really plonky ads that weren't necessarily kind of driving that creative industry that, you know, we now know and love, and the industry that certainly I wanted to be a part of. So it was kind of a big job to do, and still is, to kind of drive the brand aspects of digital. But I love the fact that there was always ambition. So this was about 10 years ago. I'll zoom in so you can actually see. Imagine when you walked into a Starbucks to purchase a Frappuccino. So, and Starbucks offered you a promotional discount through your mobile phone in real time based on your identity. And this was being talked about 10 years ago. And luckily, eventually it happened. And now it happens. And hopefully some of you around the room have actually had this experience. But my God, this is the one piece that we've been holding up for so long. So there's been some hitches, there's been some ambition, there's been some really good vision. But we're really getting to a good place. So I'll tell you a little bit about where we are now. So ad spend right now, hopefully some useful stats for you to take away. Over the last 10 years, this is our beautiful chart. Luckily, it's all going on the up, which is what we like to see. Massive sort of positive growth, 2002 upwards, 2008-09, tricky years. Every industry suffered. Digital still was on the increase, but obviously at a slightly slower rate. And now we're an industry worth 4.7 plus billion. And that was at the end of 2011. We record or measure ad spend twice yearly, and our next figures will be out in October, which we'll look at the first half of this year. So we start collecting them as of sort of the end of June. So it's a sort of really large proportion. It's a really great figure. We're seeing that digital is now contributing 8.3 billion to the GDP in the UK, which is, 8.3% to GDP in the UK, which is a fantastic feat. If we look at it in context, how does it compare to other channels, and I guess more sort of traditional channels? And if you add up every scrap of internet, search, display, affiliates, so on and so forth, same with press, classifieds and so on, TV, this is the market, 16.9 billion as of end of 2011. An internet worth over quarter that. You know, there's been a bit of a kind of growth spurts in digital and TV. You know, they are kind of similar sizes, but digital is doing amazing things, and this is a really positive picture. As I say, the 8.3% of the economy is a great thing that digital's contributing to. You can tell I'm a fan. And we're starting to see that brand advertising is on the up. There's still some way to go, but we're seeing an awful lot more FMCG brands advertising, automotive. We're not trying to do a direct response by a car, click this button. We're very much trying to get you to look at a car, make your own, customise your own model online, or maybe book a test drive, or find out where your nearest dealership is. So a lot more kind of brand campaign advertising is happening. And what we've seen with some studies that we've done is that, you know, bigger formats such as these, the sort of billboard or the wallpaper or custom background, as you may have it called, are actually doing really great jobs we still stand by the standards. The IB endorse the skyscrapers of this world, the MPUs of this world, the full 6 8 by 60 banners of this world. But they have a job to do, but it's really hard to communicate a brand engagement message through such small formats. And what we're sort of trying to help drive is for brands to create new formats. We recently ran a competition to sort of push that. And here you're seeing that something like the billboard has something like 5 times more impact than the sort of smaller formats at the start of the funnel, at the ad awareness if you're going down. So maybe at purchase intent, some smaller formats can really help you along your way. So there's a great load of sort of information that we have around that. And there's 2 more areas I want to sort of talk about in terms of where we are now. One is smartphones. Can't obviously discuss this without talking about mobile, which have absolutely reached a tipping point. So roll back to January 2011. I'd say it's a year ago, about a year and a half ago now. I can't believe we're in July. 64% of people had a feature phone. And I don't know if many people here have a feature. How many people have a smartphone here? Hands up. I should have said the other way around. Who hasn't got a smartphone? About 4 people, I think. So good representative count. So a feature phone, the last phone that those of your smartphone had before you got into your iPhone, Android, and so on, 64% January 2011 versus 36% on the smartphone. It's animation I can't take credit for, somebody else built it. That moved by January 2012, 1 year, 47% to 53%. See, I said it was a good animation. I normally get a round of applause at that point. Thanks. So a really significant shift in the number of people that are now using smartphones. And what's really exciting for us about that is we know that people use smartphones in very different ways to how they've ever interacted with the internet. People are using mobile phones a lot more in the evening time. People are using it and in the morning, first thing in the morning for news and weather and a bit of social, and in the evening massively for social media networking, and often using it at dual device and while they're doing other things. They're almost finding new time to explore the internet, which perhaps when they're in the pub or when they're on the sofa, it's something they do. When they're in bed, everyone, you know, iPad in bed, lots of people do it, apparently. So smartphones have made a real impact to the way that we are engaging with digital. And the other aspect I wanted to talk about, obviously, is social. We've talked about it already. I know you had speakers earlier in the day talking around this. I'm not going to sort of labour all the dates and all the stats, but every year between 2003 and 2006, we had significant platforms released. And this is, I've got more charts that go on after this that I haven't brought today around, you know, Pinterest, G+, Spotify, and so on. But if you sort of see the pace of the growth of those, it's pretty phenomenal. Facebook, over 901 million monthly active users, that is worldwide, with more than 300 million photos updated per day, which is obviously hugely significant. And we're seeing massive cross-fertilization across these social channels. So you look at YouTube, and 150 years of video are watched every day on Facebook. That's not on YouTube, that's on Facebook. And those numbers are going up and up. So we're sort of seeing such a phenomenon and such growth in the social space. And I think this slide sort of puts it together nicely for me. Quite a random selection of people to have on a slide, but tweets per second. It's a really interesting barometer. In fact, we've got an event later next week where we've invited the Met Police to come and talk to us about engagement and social. And they were sort of saying, you know, the Olympics presents some massively exciting opportunity to sort of define and further work out how social can aid them. They have a big sort of social media program in the Met Police to understand, you know, if there's a riot, listening out for it, dispelling myths, rumours, whatever. And when there's big sporting events or big events, you know, how to kind of control crowds, they have kind of their listening in. And actually, the volume of tweets going up per second can have a massive impact on the resources that they need to input into that side of their sort of business, as it were. So back in May 2011, Osama bin Laden's death produced the highest tweets per second at that time, at just over 3,000. Beyoncé pipped it to the post with her announcement of her pregnancy with nearly 9,000. And at the Super Bowl, in the last, I think it was 5 seconds or something like, so 10 seconds, we reached 10,000 tweets per second. And I think the Olympics will provide a really interesting bed to see how sort of engaged and responsive people are around sort of sports events and live activity. And just finally on social, what we're sort of seeing is this sort of backs up some of the things I guess I've just said, which is that when we measure the amount of time people are spending, some work that we do with UCOM, we can see that social networking accounts for the lion's share of the UK populace's time spent online. So 27%, at our last count it was just 25%. So imagine this is a clock face. If your day is in a clock face, over a quarter of an hour you are spending on social networks more than anything else, more than on search, more than on email, more than on gaming, and so on. Not to say those aren't significant amounts of time, but a fair share on social. So, what about the future? I've got a few kind of key points that I just wanted to, I guess, excite and inspire everyone with in terms of sort of looking forward after seeing that incredible growth over the first 10 years, sort of seeing where we are right now and seeing what we can look forward to. I think in digital, we can absolutely look forward to massive growth in the brand space. We've seen it, as I've said already, with more and more brand advertising occurring in the digital space and so on. And I think when you look at these two pie charts, you can see that of the brand pie, digital or online has only got 7%. And if you think back to the chart of all channels and online having sort of 27, 28%, there's obviously a big opportunity for that growth to kind of occur with, you know, a little bit more proof and evidence. And that's a lot of what we go out to do. We've got a lot of case studies that help to show how online can work really neatly and in conjunction with other channels. We know that attribution is a really challenging issue for marketers, and that obviously we all know as consumers that you don't buy something off one liaison with one particular media. You know, you get your kind of views, you get awareness through multiple channels, discussions and so on, and actually that can lead through to a sale. So our aim is really to show how digital can work neatly alongside the other media. We also know that there's some really interesting sort of eyebrowsing conversations that can be raised in the kind of privacy space. Obviously, targeted advertising and those sorts of topics can raise a lot of discussion. We recently, just I think a couple of months ago, launched this piece of research with ValueClick, which looks at how consumers actually feel about online advertising and asks them to sort of compare how happy, unhappy, or ambivalent they are about TV, radio, magazines, and then a whole host of digital. And actually, the pattern is incredibly similar across all those channels, probably excepting the social media space, where perhaps, you know, consumers aren't quite so used to the point of, you know, some social spaces are very much for personal use, or, you know, people don't want to be sort of targeted. There's actually quite an understanding that advertising pays for content, you know, and I always go back to the, do you want to pay a TV licence or do you want to watch ITV? You know, you pay for a newspaper, but you still see ads. It's sort of understanding that content and good content needs to be funded in some way, and that's kind of a big expression that we need to ensure that consumers kind of understand, and something that we seek to drive. Also looking forward, quite an exciting outlook, we've taken a look at how mobile ad spend is performing vis-a-vis online, because we know obviously mobile has a big potential future ahead of it, a massive future ahead of it. So we've tracked here in purple online ad spend 10 years ago, and in orange mobile ad spend 10 years later. And what you can see is a similar pattern, although it was slightly underpegging in 2010. Now it's starting to sort of surge past that, and the mobile advertising market is worth 200 million compared to the 4.8 billion that I talked about earlier. And we don't do forecasts ourselves at the IB. We very much measure what we can measure, but we do work with First Partner, who are a very good... they do forecasts for us on this sort of data, with the data that we have and other data that they collect. And they're usually quite conservative in their efforts and their estimations. But this is what they think it will look like. So coming up to nearly a billion by 2014, which is a great hockey stick to see. So we hope that they are being conservative, and we hope that it goes even faster, even quicker. We've also done some interesting sort of look into how tablets are being used, and I think this is a really interesting area, and it's really tough. You know, a lot of people ask us, tablets, are they a mobile device, are they a laptop? And our answer is neither, because they're different. They have a very different life, and obviously as more tablets come into circulation, different brands, this will ever grow. But we did a study recently which looked at how consumers use their laptop or computer and how they use their mobile. And they had very distinct sort of roles in their lives. So the laptop was very much about sort of secure internet access, storing important information, doing sort of, you know, admin and so on and so forth. Mobile was always ready on the go, accessing things on the move, but also just when you don't want to have to open the laptop or log onto your PC, a lot more about socializing and so on. The interesting thing is, when we looked at a third group who also had those two devices but also had a tablet device, we saw quite quickly that it wasn't cannibalising really any of the roles that the other two had. Those roles stayed the same. What they were actually doing was finding a new tranche of activities to do with a tablet. So it's much more about relaxed creativity, and we're seeing a lot of use and high usage in the evenings, sort of browsing, window shopping, not necessarily always buying, but some buying, entertainment. And anyone who's got one probably can understand what I'm saying. It's kind of a very different type of device, and people are using them in really different ways. And I'm sure that will change over time, but it's interesting to see that we're sort of spending more time online than ever before and not talking to our loved ones. And there's another view here, and this is one sort of snapshot of quite an in-depth piece of research. But I think what I wanted to make the point here was attribution looking forward. I've already touched on it, but this will continue to be incredibly important. So digital is brilliant in that it does allow us to track, where people engage at the awareness, research and purchase stages. And as I said, you know, this is notwithstanding the fact that people might have seen a magazine, TV ad, whatever. But what's interesting here is looking at how PC and smartphone influenced purchases. And actually, at the kind of awareness stage, it's a fairly even, you know, amount, percentage. So around 50% were influenced by the piece, had awareness of a product or service via their PC, and 45 via the smartphone. When it got to the research stage, you know, properly looking things up, yeah, more people went online on their PC, but actually still a healthy percentage were looking on their phone. And at the purchase stage, again, more people moved up to use the PC, but still a reasonable amount looking at the smartphone. And, you know, my randomest purchase on my mobile phone was buying a Dyson in the pub on Christmas Eve. I don't know why. We were just like, need a bloody new Hoover. And as my husband went off to get some drinks, I bought it online. And, you know, what a random item to buy on your mobile phone, like to buy music or to buy something that sort of feels quite social. But there you are. You know, I think we're all sort of starting to think a bit more about how we use different devices and how they can sort of complement the service. We're agnostic about where we spend our time and how we do things. We want the same experience. So I think nearly finally, just a little bit on voice and gesture activation. I think you've got a future presentation coming up a little bit later, but I think this is going to be a really interesting area. You know, it's not about the mouse forever. Kinect have done some really interesting things with Xbox, and new ads coming in will also sort of respond to the voice and movement gesture, which I think is just going to change quite a lot of things for us and future generations. So some really exciting stuff. So to finish, because I feel like I've talked a lot, and many of you will have seen this, but I thought I'd just show a piece of creative that makes me feel warm and fuzzy and happy about digital. This piece of work won at Cannes in the mobile category. It's Google Coke Rebrief. Rather than talk about it, I will just show it to you.